Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. You're tuned in to Columbo Chronicles at Blog Talk Radio. Follow the mover and shaker, award-winning author and host, seen on TV and radio, Rose Columbo. Every Wednesday, Rose interviews prominent experts and authors on politics and social justice. Call in and listen or ask the guests a question at 646-564-9742. Now, here's Rose.
This is the Columbo Chronicles Live, and this is Rose Columbo,
right here for you. And again, it's Wednesday, and again, we have a really special guest. We have a popular author named Michael Harris, and he grew up in the west side of Los Angeles, and he is going to be here to tell us about the West Side Stories. That's the name of his book, West Side Stories, Recollections and Reflections on Life in West Los Angeles from the 1940s to the 1960s. And that is going to be extremely exciting for all of those who knew and grew up during those times. Those were very exciting times in America. They were more simple, and there are a lot of nostalgia and a lot of memories that go along with the 40s and 60s that even the youth today have questions about and are asking about. And they look at the old classic movies, and they ask questions, and they love the way people dressed and behaved, and they notice the difference between then and now. And so there's a lot of good things that came out of that time in the real America. And Michael Harris is a Stanford graduate and an Air Force veteran with an impressive professional resume. He grew up, again, as I said, on the west side of Los Angeles in the community of Cheviot Hills. And he attended local public schools. He took trombone lessons. He worked the paper route. He served as a bowling alley pin setter. Bowling was very popular. He was a caddy at Chevy Hill's pool locker room. He was a Cheviot Hills pool locker room attendant. Get that straight. And a motion picture studio mailroom messenger. And a seller of maps to movie stars' homes. He has a BA from Stanford University and is a JD graduate of UCLA Law School. He served as a lieutenant in the United States Air Force Reserve, and he's worked as a lawyer for over 57 years, beginning at a motion picture production company preparing contracts until he joined in the formation of the firm of Rogers & Harris. He continues to practice civil law primarily in the fields of real estate, probate, and entertainment law. His personal life includes a wife, two daughters, three grandsons, and a Schipperke dog, and his avocations include gardening, orchid growing, biking, writing movie reviews for a select group of friends, and driving his vintage Morgan automobile on sunny weekends. So let's say good evening in just a few minutes to Michael Harris, who will be joining us. And right now, I wanted to give you a little nostalgia about a little memory that many of us had with the Helms Bakery truck and the Helms man. And there's an article that talks about the Helms Bakery, which is to reopen in Culver City next year, which would have been 2013. So hopefully it's open by now. But the article said, awesome news for those who love the nostalgia of the old Helms Bakery in Culver City. 44 years after closing, it's reopening. So that's good news to a lot of people who didn't know that Helms Bakery was reopening. And at the helm will be Sherry Yard, who has served as the executive pastry chef of the Wolfgang Puck Fine Dining Group, and Chef Sang Yoon, Father's Office, Luke Sean. Well, I just want to put a little note in here that you can't go wrong eating at Wolfgang Puck's Fine Dining. It is a great experience. And expected to open last fall of 2013, the revitalized Helms Bakery will feature a multi-space layout, including a full-service restaurant for breakfast and lunch, and a dedicated bakery with a takeaway counter for prepared foods, as well as a retail section of specialty products, according to the press release. A preview version of the menu will be available in order from at Father's Office 2.0 in Culver City beginning in January 2013. Longtime Angelenos undoubtedly remember the signature blue and yellow Helms bakery trucks that delivered fresh bakeries and pastries to various neighborhoods around the town between 1931 and 1969. They almost made it into the 70s before closing when their business model could no longer compete with the irreversible reality of modern supermarkets, per an old LA Times feature on the company. Awesome news about the reopening aside, I also reached out, the author says, to Chris Nichols, resident of LA History Buffs, and he answered some questions on some tidbits, and he said, "Did you know Helms bread was carried on the Apollo 11 capsule, earning it the distinction of being the first bread on the moon? Helms won the contract to supply bread to the 1932 Summer Olympic athletes and promptly emblazoned their packaging with the branding Helms Olympic Bread. The Helmsman statue that once sat in front of the bakery was donated to Burton W. Chase Park in Marina Del Rey, and it is still there today. LA 84 Foundation, the athletic organization that Mr. Helms started, now runs an amazing library and sports archive near USC and continues to fund youth sports programs. The original Helms delivery coaches can still be seen locally at the Peterson Automotive Museum and the Lion Air Museum. And the Helms rooftop neon sign was restored in 2003 and is now powered by solar panels. Helms Bakery is located at 8758 Venice Boulevard, Culver City, and the website is helmsbakerydistrict.com for more information." I thought that was quite interesting and a little walk back to your time. And so on that note, we're going to take a break, and when I come back, we're going to go back to recollections and reflections of life in West Los Angeles when our special guest, Michael Harris, attorney and author, will share his story, West Side Stories, as soon as we come back on Colombo Chronicles Live. So don't touch that dial. I'll be back in just a moment.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Colombo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics, from politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up, Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc, Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Colombo's home on the Colombo Chronicles Live to your home, Colombo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because now we're going to welcome our special guest, Michael Harris. And I told you a little about his background at the beginning of the show. And Michael Harris is the author of West Side Stories, Recollections and Reflections on Life in West Los Angeles from the 1940s to the 1960s. And he is a Stanford graduate and an Air Force veteran with an impressive professional resume as a practicing attorney. So it's going to be fun to go back to Michael Harris's childhood and his growing up on the west side of Los Angeles. So let's welcome Michael Harris. Good evening, Michael. How are you this evening?
I'm fine, thank you. Nice to be on.
Well, it's great to have you this evening, and I gave the audience a little bit about your bio and your background, and we're really excited because people like nostalgia. They like to hear about what happened in the past, not only the people that live through it, but also the future generations who are asking questions and want to know what happened from the time their parents or grandparents grew up to the present time. So the first question I have for you, Michael, is why did you write West Side Stories, and how did you come up with the title?
Well, okay. I wrote it because I was doing some vignettes in the writing field for my son-in-law, who had a real estate agency in the West Side, and he was putting out little brochures with his listings. And I thought, you know, it would be a good idea if the people who buy into your area have a little knowledge about the history and the background of the area. And so I started giving him little paragraphs of my recollections, and that developed into the book. As for the name West Side Stories, it was a play on the actual theatrical West Side Stories, because I had at one time in my legal career worked for the studio that produced the movie, and I did all the contracts for Natalie Wood, for Richard Beamer, for the Jets and Sharks, and so I had a close connection to the West Side Story production, and I just used that as a play on words since we were on the west side of Los Angeles.
Well, that's excellent, because I'm sure at that time in your life you never dreamed that you would be writing a book called West Side Stories. So it's strange how life seems to lead us from one place to another that we never dreamed we would be. But we're glad you're here with West Side Stories. And I know you have some personal familiarity with some of the events depicted in your book. Why don't you give us a little background about the little stories or tidbits you provide in your book that you think would be significant to our audience?
Well, I think that most of your audience will be familiar with and want to recall some of the old days if they are of a certain vintage. For example, the very first television sets and where you had to go to watch the television sets, and then what programs they had and the test patterns. And then before that, we all had our favorite radio shows. I remember before going to sleep at night, I had to listen to Hop Harrigan. And, of course, everybody else remembers the Lone Ranger in the radio days and the Green Hornet and all those adventure stories that were on the radio. And I just thought it would be fun to kind of put it in perspective and have people recognize before there was the computers and computer games and all that, how we spend our time enjoying ourselves.
Yes, and we did. And what do you believe the present generation has missed by being born so much later, and now they're involved in computers and cell phones, and they don't have to actually think and use their imagination on what they are going to do that day to entertain themselves and their friends as they do, because now they do sit in front of the computer and they do look down at their cell phones and their video games for hours and hours. So
well,
what do you think about that?
Well, I think they're missing out a great deal, and I think it's very distressing that the computer age has taken away some of the physical adventure that can be discovered by young explorers in their neighborhood. In our day, we had no golf course, where there's now a Rancho golf course, a big public course in West Los Angeles. In my day, that was pre the golf course. It was a great big open field, and we had rabbits to jump after. We had our dogs to run around. We had adventure. We could see the movies being made there. They did make a bunch of movies there on that old golf course. And the things that everybody did of, again, my vintage, most of the boys had paper routes. I don't think present-day children have paper routes, because there aren't as many papers, and the evening dailies, the competition between the Examiner and the Mirror and the old papers that aren't there anymore, but they were always available for the boys to deliver. And those paper routes taught us all about economics and about commerce and about striving. And that kind of personal education is not necessarily available today because of the lack of the newspapers and that kind of thing. And of course, in those days, there wasn't as much concern about the dangers. Everybody, no matter how young, rode the public buses and got around quite well. And those kinds of adventures, I think, are a little more foreclosed now. So it was a different era. And I think that the youth today will be missing out on a lot of that, and that's part of the reason for the book, so that people can see how we all lived and how it differs from what goes on today with the mothers driving everybody to very organized recreation, where we made our own baseball field and played ourselves. We didn't have Little League. We didn't have parents pushing us this way or that way. We sort of drifted into whatever we found would be interesting for us, and I think we were the better for it.
And I noticed, too, in your book that you had jobs as a child. You took on jobs. You worked at several different jobs, and you mentioned Overland Avenue Elementary School and Hamilton High School, where you worked as a locker room attendant at the public swimming pool in Rancho Park, and you sold maps to the homes of the stars. Did you earn money as a child and doing these different jobs that you took on?
Oh, yeah, lots of little jobs. That's what I was mentioning, the paper route, for example, and the locker room attendant at the swimming pool, and the pin setting at the local bowling alley. And, I was a little older when I was standing on the corners up in Hollywood selling maps to movie star homes. But everybody seemed to take on a variety of these little jobs. They weren't really necessary for financial need, but they were an exposure, a chance for independence, and a learning experience. So, I don't think I was unique in that regard. I think all of us had a variety of jobs, which I think was a very substantial education outside of the schools, but it was very valuable.
I think so, too. And West Side Stories is a coffee table book, and so it's like a pleasurable book to read, and it takes people back into our past. And inside your book, you talk about the schools of the 50s, and someone mentioned that they used to call a break nutrition. And then there were the Helms Bakery trucks and the Good Humor trucks and so forth. And isn't that really like almost a part of American history, because it was
just a time that
they came, these companies came to the doorstep when women were at home being moms and housewives.
Well, that's right. The two parents out working was much rarer in those days. The mother was at home for the most part. And as you point out, there were many, many services that came to the home that we don't see today, and the one that you mentioned before that is very high on my recollection is the Helms truck, where we would go out there listening to this high-pitched whistle that would attract all the housewives and their children to the big open trucks with their drawers of goodies, and we'd certainly get what we could in the way of cakes and cookies. And when you mention nutrition, that's always high in my sweet tooth heart, because at junior high school, I guess it was between 10 and 11 o'clock, they had this period called nutrition, and they had the greatest cinnamon raisin rolls that I still look for every time I go to any other bakery today, and I say, "Do you have any cinnamon raisin rolls?" And they sometimes have the rolls, but they never quite live up to the rolls that we got in junior high school. So they had the produce trucks that came around. They had delivery of milk and dairy products. They had separate trucks for the ice. They had trucks for the dog food. We had horse meat deliveries on a regular basis. So we did go to the markets and we did go to the drugstores, but quite a bit of stuff was delivered to the home, which is, you know, coming back now after half a century, coming back with Amazon and the deliveries from the markets. But we did look forward to the Helms truck and the Good Humor Man and the bells and the whistles. It was small time, good time America. And it was. Yeah.
And so who do you think will be interested in your book, West Side Stories?
Well, I hope it's going to be of universal interest to those who seek some nostalgia, in that they'll be able to reflect on their experiences, and younger people who will learn from it. And there's plenty of pictures, so if you don't want to spend a lot of time reading the text, you can see the pictures of the old movie theaters, the old buildings that aren't here anymore, and the old bus that used to take us around. So I think it has a wide interest for people, and it's a nice gift item too, because people who receive a coffee book like that will appreciate looking at what the days were like and refreshing their recollection. And I've heard from other people who have read the book and didn't experience quite the same personal geographic locale that I did. In other words, I had specific schools that I went to, but people of the same era who went to different schools in different cities call me and say, you know, your experiences are quite similar to mine, and we had the same kind of thing in the day, even though it might not have been necessarily in West Los Angeles. It was a fairly typical area that I think is reflected in the geography throughout the country for those years.
Yes, and I noticed one thing you mentioned is incinerators in the backyard. I don't think we see those any longer. They probably are outlawed, right?
Well, you certainly don't see incinerators, and I don't think you see incinerators I don't think other places in the country had those. I think those were very indigenous to the local Southern California landscape. And they caused a lot of smog, and they were probably not very healthy, where if people don't know what they are, you would put your papers and trash in a kind of a concrete facility there and just burn them up. And smoke would come out, and the smoke was a pollution, and it wasn't a good way of getting rid of your trash, but that's how we did it in the old days.
And so did you do your own research? Did you have your own photos? Where did you get your information?
Well, a combination of places. We had some of the photos in our own personal collection of family and other photos, and we had photos that were available from sources that we found and had to do some research. There's a particular photo of an actress named Carol Landis with me and with my brother. She had done a publicity shoot for 20th Century Fox, and they had put her in an overcoat where they put a lot of spots on the overcoat to match our Dalmatian dogs. And so she was in Photoplay or Screenplay or one of those movie publicity magazines with a shot of her in the coat and our two dogs. And we had that picture in our personal collection, she and in the doggy coat with our dogs. And there are a lot of photos of the old theaters that are no longer there, the local theaters. But we managed to find a lot of pictures.
And how long did it take you from the time you conceived the idea of West Side Stories to get to publication?
Well, I would say it was probably, I have to say about 18 months, maybe 2 years. It was the first. Go ahead.
Did you learn anything or any tips that you wanted to pass on to anyone who maybe wanted to do a coffee table book and with photos and a little bit of history behind their photographs?
Well, I think the tip I would have to give anyone interested in doing that kind of a project would be make sure it's a labor of love. Make sure that whatever your topic or subject is going to be, that you really are passionate about it. Because otherwise it's a bit of a drudge. But if you're really interested and really passionate about the topic, whatever it might be, my advice is to diligently go about doing it and exercise that great exposure to your emotional outlet that comes from doing something you really believe in and love.
Excellent. And so from your experiences as a child, because as we said, most kids don't have to go out and do any, mowing lawns or babysitting or being a paper boy or anything like that any longer because, first of all, safety reasons, and second of all, the government outlaws lemonade stands now, and thirdly, the children are handed a lot of things today that are very expensive and don't have to earn. So, in your experience, can you share any stories about when you were a paper boy or a caddy or selling maps to the movie star of the movie stars and or a pool attendant?
Well, yeah, I mean, every one of those jobs were something to get you a memory because everything would go wrong and you never forget that. I remember when I was a locker boy at the pool, I couldn't find somebody's clothing. You used to put the clothing in a basket and get a number, and you'd go out swimming, and when you came back, you'd give them the number, and you'd want your basket of clothes, but if you mixed up the number, they got the wrong clothes, and that happened occasionally on the movie star maps. You never were sure that the maps you were selling were up to date. I always felt a little bit concerned that if the address given for the home of Cary Grant wasn't quite up to date, you were cheating people or not being above board. And there was always a little concern about that. When I was caddying, you learned about human nature. You could see the person you were carrying the bags. Once in a while, somebody would cheat with moving his ball, and you learned lessons in life. Each one of these jobs disclosed something else about the human comedy, and it sticks with you. And as I've said previously, it certainly supplements your academic education with practical learning, so that you know in the world not everybody is completely honest. Not everyone is free of mistakes. Not everyone is going to do what he says he's going to do. And each job teaches you a lesson like that. When we were paper boys, one of the things we had to do was collect for the money at the end of the month when the person got his paper, and half the people would never pay you. And why they wouldn't pay you was always an interesting thing in itself. Either they claim they didn't order the paper, or they claim they never got the paper, or they claim they didn't want the paper. And so you never made money at that game. If you broke even, you were lucky, but you profited by the experience and by the education.
Yes, and that is invaluable. And
yes.
Our last question, as we're coming to the end of this wonderful interview, we're speaking to Michael Harris, author of West Side Stories, Recollections and Reflections of Life in West Los Angeles from the 1940s to the 1960s. Very interesting times in America. How does your experience growing up differ from that of your grandchildren or the youth of today?
Well, I think we've touched on that. They don't have these outside the household jobs where they can learn things. They don't have the freedom to get on a bus and go downtown to a concert. They don't have the exposure to the back lot of the studios to sneak into. And they don't have the alfresco baseball game. They have to be in uniform, and they have to be watched by their parents, and all the kinds of things that do today that they miss out on because they didn't have the experiences we did to get in a league and go to a sporting goods store and get somebody to sponsor you. And in other words, we did all that, where now the parents do all that. And of course, the computer age makes communication completely different. The trip to the library to dig out a fact that might be obscure, and the thrill of finding the right answer to a question isn't available now, because anybody can go to Google, ask any question, and get the answer in an instant. So the world has changed, and it's not necessarily for the better. And yes, it sounds like I'm talking about the good old days, but be perfectly honest, I'm a great believer in the age of Eisenhower prosperity. I think Eisenhower was a great, great president. He doesn't get the credit for it that he should, and the world was a better place because of the politics and the activities of the day, although I'm not going to say that everyone shared in that golden glow. There was there were social problems that were under the surface that came more to the surface in later years, and I'm not such a it's not that I don't see these things, but my own personal experience and those who I think will enjoy the book will see that with its faults, it was still a wonderful time to grow up.
Yes, I agree. I agree. I totally agree. And so now is your time to shine, Michael Harris. And you can leave any message you like for the audience, as well for myself, and also where they can purchase your book or contact you or, any website, any social media that you would like to leave with the audience.
Well, the purchase of the book, the easiest way to do it is to purchase it through Amazon. It is on Amazon under West Side Stories, and Michael Harris is the author. The publisher is the Americas Group, which is on Sepulveda Boulevard in Los Angeles. And my final word, I would say, is that I believe that the book would be a very welcome gift. And if someone is looking to buy a piece of special history, and that is the west side of Los Angeles in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, then this book will be a, I think, enjoyable read and addition for anybody's coffee table.
Thank you so much, and we really do appreciate your visiting us and on Colombo Chronicles Live this evening, and we hope to talk to you again and see how the West Side Stories, Recollections and Reflections on Life in West Los Angeles from the 1940s to the 60s is moving along. And also, if you have a new book, you certainly are welcome to let us know in the future. And you have a pleasant evening, Michael Harris, and thank you so much for being on Colombo Chronicles.
And thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much and enjoyed it. Thank you. Good night.
Good night. And Michael Harris has left the building. And be sure to check out West Side Stories, Recollections and Reflections on Life in West Los Angeles. And that is at Amazon.com. And on that note, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what's going on in our country and with our president. He is a wonderful person. I just love him. I don't know how anybody in this country could be unhappy with him. He's a total American patriot. Everybody has faults. There isn't any politician that doesn't, or any person, any individual. But he's really down to earth, and he just talks to the people. And I think that's why people love him. That's why the majority of Americans voted for him, and that's why they support him. And to the surprise of everyone that didn't. All those poor losers and crybabies out there. So they need to get a grip. And I'll be back in just a moment, so be sure not to touch that dial.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Colombo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because you are listening to Colombo Chronicles Live, and that is every Wednesday. And all shows are archived, so you can go to blogtalkradio.com/ Colombo Chronicles, and you can check out, just scroll on down, any topic, any special guest, and listen to the entire show. And also you can go to my Facebook, where I post many of the shows, and listen to them right there as well. And also, my other Facebook is the Justice Club, and you're welcome to sign up for the Justice Club. Because there's very little justice in the world today, so, embrace the little we have. the Breitbart website wrote an article. It says, Dick Morris was James Comey the leader of the coup? It says, this is by Dick Morris. The following excerpt is from Rogue Spooks, The Intelligence War on Donald Trump by Dick Morris and Eileen McGann, published by arrangement with All Points Book, an imprint of St. Martin's Press, a division of Mellon Publishers. Who is behind the intelligence group? You know, watching our White House and all the players is better than watching television. It's better than watching a mystery movie. It's better than watching reality shows. I mean, it's like they keep you on the edge of your chair. Every day you haven't a clue what they're going to do next, what is going to happen next. I mean, seriously, the best writer couldn't write the stories of today's politicians and what they're up to. Everything has a twist and a turn. Well, who's behind the intelligence coup? It began with an unverified dossier compiled by Christopher Steele, the former M16 spy, who, MI6 spy, who was hired by a U.S. opposition research firm and paid by Hillary Clinton supporters to find dirt connecting Donald Trump with the Kremlin during the campaign. In retrospect, the highly flawed dossier was the catalyst that triggered everything else. A lost leader. False though it may have been, its allegations were sufficiently outrageous and sensational to attract the kind of nonstop media attention necessary to put the phony issue of a Trump-Putin arrangement on the front pages. Well, I look at it as a diversion, a diversion away from all the scandals. And so if you're guilty, point the finger at the innocent. And for some reason, the DOJ will go after the innocent. Maybe it's because they're easier to prosecute. So we still don't know who is behind the dossier. We don't know the identities of the Hillary supporters who paid for it. Isn't that amazing? We don't know the identities of the Hillary supporters, the Secretary of State, who paid for it. Seriously, what do we know? We don't know anything. I mean, we know there's lots and lots of scandals. We know there's lots and lots of dead people who committed suicide, shot themselves in the back of the head, hung themselves, put a pillow or a plastic bag over their head, walked into a forest, and dropped dead. That's what we know. Or ran their car suddenly into a tree. I mean, we do know those things. But the bodies keep piling up, and nobody seems to care. That we do know. So more important, we don't know anything because the former FBI director Comey laid out all the guilt of Hillary Clinton, and then after he laid out all the guilt, he decided that he couldn't find her guilty because she couldn't possibly know what she was doing after she had a pattern of doing it the same thing for 4 years. She didn't know what she was doing for 4 years, and we were paying her as Secretary of State, and she was becoming very wealthy and gaining financial support for her political run for the presidential office and for her personal dynasty. And that's stunning in itself. And hiring links to the Muslim Brotherhood who were hacking into the classified and non-classified emails that belonged to We the People, the government, and should have been secured, but were not. And then they had the Awan brothers they hired. We were paying them $160,000 each to hack into the congressional members' computers. And they're all linked to the Muslim Brotherhood in Saudi Arabia. And and it goes on and on and on. So I'm telling you, there isn't a mystery writer who could write this novel. So it's like a crazy reality show with the world turned upside down. And what is wrong is right, and what is right is wrong. What is evil is good, what is good is evil. It is actually a spiritual battle between good and evil, and that's where this country is at. So don't stay on the fence. Pick a side. Whatever you do, don't sit on the fence. Because one way or another, you're going to get shot down, so you need to pick a side. So more importantly, we do not know who actually made up the allegations that had been proven false and were passed to Steele, who went all that trouble. Well, with Hillary Clinton, in the past, that would have been, in my opinion, a breach of national security and a breach of national security trust and espionage and destruction of government property. But under Comey's decision and Lynch's decision, it was extreme carelessness. And it was reduced to extreme carelessness as if you, I don't know, walked into a store and stole a candy bar. That's about the way it turned out. So don't expect anything big to happen to any of those key players, in my opinion. Too big to fail, too rich to fail, too powerful to fail. I don't know. I guess all of the above. So in retrospect, this highly flawed dossier was the catalyst that triggered everything else. A lost leader, false though it may have been, its allegations were sufficiently outrageous and sensational to attract the kind of nonstop media attention necessary to put the phony issue of a Trump-Putin arrangement on the front pages. But nobody mentioned that Obama met with Putin during the elections around October of 2016, person to person. And nobody seems to care that Hillary Clinton sold enriched uranium that belongs to we the people, the taxpayers, while Secretary of State, which is beyond and above her job duties. So it seems unlikely. I don't know if they read their job duties or if they even care to read them. The president has job duties. The vice president has job duties. Each congressman has job duties. Senators have job duties. I don't think they read them because they don't read the legislation that they rubber stamp approved, like Obamacare with death panels for the American people and excessive Cadillac taxes and fines and non-affordable health care. But why should they care? Why should they bother to read it when they can just rubber stamp it? Approved by a non-vetted president who can't produce a certified U.S. birth certificate and exempted himself and Congress and the donors and the Muslims and the illegals and the senators and the justices from paying up or signing up or being punished. So they're not going to repeal Obamacare, and the reason they're not going to repeal Obamacare is because it's part of the New World Order in the United Nations Agenda 21 with mandated taxpayer-funded abortions for depopulation of Americans, future Americans. It's also depopulation for the elderly, the chronically ill, the cancer patients, the veterans, the poor, etc., who can't afford to purchase Obamacare. It's also mandated microchips. It mandates that we support the migration, foreign invasion of all the unidentified foreigners that Obama migrated into our country, who are a majority of fake refugees, fake Christian refugees, because they are not here from their own words and writings and their own speeches on television, in the news, online, to assimilate or follow U.S. constitutional law but they are here to impose their tyrannical law on Americans and replace the Constitution with their foreign ideologies. So that's where we're at with Obamacare. It's my opinion, unless the American people rise up and demand peacefully, legally, and constitutional that they repeal and nullify and veto and void out an unconstitutional, illegal, unlawful umbrella of mandates, requirements, laws, death panels, fines, excessive fines, excessive taxes that aren't taxes, excessive fines that shouldn't be fines, Cadillac tax, and so forth. As long as they don't have to sign up and pay up, and which actually they don't have the authority to exempt themselves from the law, because only lawbreakers exempt themselves from the law. They're called criminals. So basically, we have a rogue government. And so, according to this article, it says, it seems unlikely that the Russians would implicate themselves. I don't think the Russians are going to implicate themselves any more than Antifa is going to implicate themselves with their mask, or the radicals are going to implicate themselves while they wear masks to commit their unlawful acts, or the terrorists are no more than the government officials are going to implicate themselves or those that they favor. But they certainly might have, it says. Was it rogue British and or U.S. spooks, spies from other countries? Well, does it matter? It's already the damage is done and nobody's been held accountable. No one's going to be prosecuted, in my opinion. And they're all just going to keep using diversions to keep the American people diverted away from the scandals until all of these people are either forgotten or pass away. The patriots are no longer interested in the scandals that are swept away as carelessness. And so, I mean, although that sounds sarcastic and probably to a lot of people, and it sounds maybe odd or strange to others, the truth is that Obamacare is unconstitutional, illegal, and unlawful. And I wrote the first blog and sent it to every congressional member and posted it on congress.org on their White House blog site. And it was partially read on the congressional floor because I stated that it borders on extortion. And it's like having an imaginary gun to every American's head saying, pay up, whether you want the consumer product or not, or the consumer service with your own earnings after taxes, or else be punished. And everybody else is exempted. And then Americans are forced to pay up for themselves, for their families, and for the government workers, and for the prisoners, and for all the unidentified foreign invaders that Obama migrated into this country. And that's the bottom line. So who's going to clean up that mess? Because President Trump inherited a mess. And he has a lot of enemies from within and without. And so we have to pray that we keep the president, that the Lord keeps the president safe, and that he gives him good judgment, and that he does repeal Executive Order 13391, and that he repeals or vetoes and nullifies Obamacare in its entirety, because it should not even be any executive order signed by a unidentified public servant should not be legal, lawful, or constitutional, period. That's my opinion, You have your opinion. You do your own homework. You do your own research. Anything said on Columbo Chronicles is intended to be for educational purposes, entertainment, and for informational purposes only. Always do your own homework. Always seek out your own advisors. And always listen to Columbo Chronicles every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. with very special guests from around the world. God bless you. God bless America. And and keep up the good work, patriots. Keep up the good work and protect the sovereignty of this great, great nation. And like President Trump says, make America great again. So God bless you. Take care. And remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me, but together we can make a positive difference. So until we talk again, this is the Rose saying, stay healthy, stay happy, and have a little fun while you're at it.
Rose Columbo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Columbo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Columbo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Columbo Chronicles.